Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. And you know, you can listen to The Takeaway anytime by subscribing to our podcast. You can find it on our website, thetakeaway.org, or on iTunes. Hey, just another day at the office for a U.S. federal employee.
Every time you suit up, it's life or death. You roll the dice. And you deal with it.
A study shows how vulnerable government employees are to terrorists carrying bombs into federal buildings. More than a decade after Oklahoma City, we learned Timothy McVeigh wouldn't need a truck if he planned his attack for this week. Insecurity. Federal employees in the Hurt Locker on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry. It's Thursday, July 9th, and we're taking a look at real insecurity for federal workers. Also, a look at commodities after oil. Get out your pronouncers, folks. Escaping from traffic jams by magic, and Detroit. People in Detroit think, is there life after GM's bankruptcy? Most of them say yes. But first, Mark Goldstein, you're the Director of Physical Infrastructure Issues at the U.S. Government Accountability Office. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Now, you helped do this study on how federal buildings are vulnerable to smuggled-in bombs, and we love to exaggerate here on The Takeaway, but I'm suspecting that it's unfair to characterize being a federal employee as like being a bomb diffuser in the Hurt Locker, right?
I think that would be fair, yeah.
That's an exaggeration. Okay, but a serious question, how should federal employees feel knowing about this study, and we're going to talk about the details in a moment, going to work today?
Well, I think federal employees and anyone who goes into a federal building today ought to have some concern because there is no assurance that the people guarding these facilities are fully trained and fully can do their job because the testing we did proved that there were serious deficiencies with securing federal property.
Wow. Mark Goldstein not pulling any punches there. We'll talk about the details of the study in just a moment. Mark, he's the Director of Physical Infrastructure Issues at the Government Accountability Office. Stay with us. In the news at the G8 in Italy today, President Obama is taking part in global emission standards talks with the main developing nations, including China, India, and Brazil, but they're having some difficulty coming to any kind of an agreement. In the U.S., officials in Los Angeles say they spent $1.4 million on city services for Michael Jackson's memorial. That includes more than $1 million in police overtime. The TV audience, by the way, was huge, just a little less than for Princess Diana's memorial. General Motors could emerge from bankruptcy today. A deal to sell its assets to a government-backed company is expected to close. The Obama administration is bringing state officials together to tackle plans for an expected surge of H1N1 flu cases this fall. It's kind of a flu summit. And a spate of suicide bombings in Iraq has killed at least 40 people today and wounded more. Meanwhile, Afghan officials say at least 25 people, including school children, have been killed in a roadside explosion south of the capital city of Kabul. Two NATO troops in the south have been killed as well. World markets were mostly flat yesterday, although commodities prices have been taking something of a dive. Oil prices crashing. We're going to talk about commodities a little later on in the program. The Dow opens today at 8178. The S&P starts trading at 880, and the NASDAQ begins at 1747. Futures trading suggests another flat opening on Wall Street. So the Michael Jackson Memorial event, we're not going to talk much more about that, but the Obama inauguration, these events were watched online by a huge audience. It's an interesting media story. Suddenly, maybe the traditional TV looks a little retro. We want to hear your stories. Have you gotten rid of your cable box or your television? Tell us your stories of getting rid of TV, how and why. 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at KnightFoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here, flying solo on the Takeaway studios here in New York City. So as you could hear at the top of the hour, we referred to this disturbing report that the Government Accountability Office released to the press yesterday. Disturbing certainly to federal workers. It shows video and a report documenting that GAO investigators were a perfect 10 for 10 in smuggling bomb-making materials into different high-security federal buildings. In a post-9/11 and Oklahoma City world, it certainly shocked Senator Joe Lieberman of Connecticut.
It really is outrageously unacceptable that the federal employees working within our federal buildings and the citizens who pass through them are still apparently so utterly exposed to potential attack by terrorists or other violent people.
Well, we want to welcome back Mark Goldstein, Director of Physical Infrastructure Issues at the U.S. Department of General Accountability Office, who led this investigation. Also joining us is security strategist J.R. Roberts. He's a security strategist at J.R. Roberts Security Strategies. J.R. and Mark, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
First, Mark, let's continue our discussion. Describe the methodology of this study and what you were able to do. I said there at the top you were 10 for 10 in smuggling bomb-making materials. What kinds of things were you able to get into buildings?
Well, I'm not allowed to say exactly what we used because that information is classified, because we did bring in real bomb-making materials. Often tests that are done on buildings are done with fake materials, fake bombs, but that wasn't the case here. It was real live materials, and it was just done at a concentration level that the bombs would not have gone off for safety reasons. But the materials were real. We did bring them through security in all 10 federal buildings we tried to enter, and we took the materials into bathrooms and assembled the bombs and then walked freely around the offices of executive branch agencies as well as some field offices of U.S. legislature. As well.
Now, these were level four facilities, Homeland Security, Department of State. I believe Social Security Administration might have been a part of this as well.
These were all level four facilities, and the agencies of the Department of Homeland Security, Justice, State, Treasury, and Health and Human Services, and other organizations all had offices in the buildings that we visited.
And I don't want to do like a combat flashback here for America, but I remember one of the worst parts of the Murrow Building story in Oklahoma City back in the 90s was the fact that there was a federal daycare center in the facility. Were there daycare centers and child care centers in some of these federal facilities as well?
I don't want to describe the facilities too specifically, but there were certainly plenty of opportunity for the public in a variety of forms to come in and out because we chose buildings that had a great deal of public access.
Wow. Well, you can hear in the tone there Mark Goldstein being very responsible in hedging the way he talks about the facts of this report. J.R. Roberts, in general, when people hear conversations like this in the media, are we giving information to people? Are we encouraging them to carry out attacks by offering our disclosure of this vulnerability?
No, I don't think so. I think Mr. Goldstein was very careful in the way in which this process was conducted. I think he's right to withhold certain pieces of information. I guess the thing that surprises me the most is, out of this report is that we are surprised by the report. I think some of the challenges that exist are endemic within the system. I mean, you've got the FPS has a budget of almost $1 billion.
That's the Federal Protective Service that actually is responsible for security at all these buildings?
Yes, sir.
Right.
And as was pointed out, they have over 13,000 private contract security officers working. Now, that's reflective of 67 different companies. One sampling that Mr. Goldstein came up with that I thought was terrific was in looking just at one of those contractors, one of those private security contractors, and looking at 354 guards, 75% of them had expired certifications or no records of training.
Oh, that's...
And I think this cuts to the heart of it. I mean, this is endemic within the private security industry, you know, an industry that, by the way, has a greater turnover rate than the fast food industry.
Wow. Well, let me put that to Mark Goldstein. J.R. Roberts, who we were just talking with there, is a security strategist in Savannah, Georgia. Mark Goldstein, J.R. Roberts suggests that many, if not most, of the security personnel for federal buildings are subcontractors. They're not even under the full umbrella of the federal, federal employee net, whatever that is.
Well, the Federal Protective Service has a contract security guard force of 13,000 contract guards protecting about 2,500, 2,300 buildings of the 9,000 buildings in the government portfolio. But the problem is, because the Federal Protective Service itself is so stretched in the responsibilities that it has, what we found is their ability to oversee and supervise this contract guard force is not as good as it needs to be, and that the as a result, FPS had no assurance that guards were trained correctly and had certifications before they stood post at a federal facility. They had no complete assurance that once they were on post, that they were doing their job according to the responsibilities that they had. And then, of course, the part we've already talked about, there was no assurance that the buildings themselves were secure because we were able to penetrate every single building that we wanted to with bomb-making materials.
Now, J.R. Roberts, one of the things we discovered in the Murrow building attack in Oklahoma City was that here, an utterly unimportant in terms of, you know, a national profile federal building that no one had heard of before this happened is suddenly made immortal by this horrible brutality. Even though these are level four facilities and there might not be gold bricks in them or, you know, cabinet secretaries to be taken hostage, although in this case there probably were, almost any federal facility of whatever security designation could be made this kind of terrorist symbol. Why is level four not level five, J.R. Roberts?
Well, there's no good reason why it shouldn't be. In other words, I mean, I think Mr. Goldstein pointed out another flaw in the system, and that is the FPS, again, the Federal Protective Services Administration, is stretched beyond belief. I also think it's a little disingenuous. You opened the show with a quote from Senator Lieberman, and I think it's a little disingenuous for Senator Lieberman to be running around wringing his hands saying he's shocked to discover that some of these people are inadequately trained, because part of the problem is that the very agencies that are responsible or have the ability, our Congress that has the ability to really mandate national levels of training and then put teeth behind the ability to enforce those levels of training, are frankly conflicted by lobbying interests. I mean, Senator Lieberman received $53,500 last year from a single contract security firm, and I'm sure he's not alone. And I consider that to be a serious conflict of interest when we're trying to supervise these companies, many of whom, by the way, that are currently providing contract security services and are allowed to bid for these services, many of whom have been cited by state agencies repeatedly for the very kinds of violations that Mr. Goldstein confirmed, a failure to hire adequately, a failure to train. I've got numerous cases all over the country where I'm dealing with private security firms that hired known felons, and then a tragedy occurred.
All right, J.R. Roberts, before we go, I want to bring it back to Mark Goldstein, who is actually the director of physical infrastructure issues at the Government Accountability Office, and I guess will be somewhat involved in the fix here. Is this another design question where we've become kind of top-heavy in security in the United States, where we got lots of great satellites and lots of planners and maybe all kinds of electronic equipment, but not enough boots on the ground, even in our own country, even in our own federal buildings, Mark Goldstein?
Well, I think there's no substitute for an effectively trained and certified and supervised workforce that has the best ability, probably more than technology can, to be able to affect security in federal buildings. One of the reasons why some of the examples that we brought up in our report occurred is because the guards were not fully trained. They were not at their posts doing their work all the time. They were not looking, for instance, at the X-ray machines as materials went through in some cases. And so there is no substitute for an effectively trained workforce that's supervised. And that, in I think our opinion, is the biggest issue, is to making sure that the management and supervision of this program can be improved. Sure, there are resource issues and issues of maybe people having too much to do in some instances and being stretched thin, but at the end of the day, a better managed workforce would help.
Let's leave people with a resource issue before we go. You talked about the cost of training, and the Congress will have to deal with that. In your experiment in trying to smuggle bombs, how much did the materials cost? to get these bombs through right. the...
These were made with ordinary, relatively ordinary materials that could be purchased for...
How much?
$150.
$150. Well, there's your takeaway. Mark Goldstein, Director of Physical Infrastructure Issues at the U.S. Government Accountability Office and J.R. Roberts Security Strategist at J.R. Roberts Security Strategies. Thanks so much, guys.
Sure. Thank you,
Beth.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
869-8253.
You know, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening. If you have any feedback or think there's any stories we should be covering on The Takeaway, contact us at 1-877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. See ya.